All right, so we are in Genesis chapter 39. Genesis chapter 39. If you are in literally any other book, you have gone too far. We are in Genesis chapter 39. Thank you for appreciating that joke, Emma and Kristen. Okay, so one of the things that we like to do, so this is going to be, we did kind of a service last year where I just kind of preached, and it was, it was fire, as always, but we want to, like, make it more this kind of, like, hangout and, like, where people ask questions and that sort of thing and read out loud and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be okay. We're going to be all right. I promise. I'll get you through it. But one of the things we like to do, for those of you who are new, I'm a huge nerd, so I love to read, and I think books meet so many situations, and I say this every week. So, but with me, you know, you're here with me for like 30 minutes, and then you're gone. But with a book, if we give you a book, it sits on your shelf patiently waiting to be read, and you can pull it out at any point. The thing that we're talking through tonight is the first thing. It's called The Struggle is Real, and so what we're going to talk through with that is daily struggles, not so much the big things. We did Job last semester, which was more the big things, you know. But what about the small things? What about, like, you know, you bombed the test, not that this happens to any of you guys, but you bombed the test that you thought you had, or the flat tire, or the check bounces, didn't see that one coming, and, like, you know, problems at home, or problems with family, or not so much family, and that is the problem, you know, all kinds of the little things that kind of, like, that just, like, do this, you know what I mean, that just kind of, like, you're walking around, and this is happening all the time. That's what we want to talk about. Where is Jesus in those things? Does that make sense? That's why we're calling it The Struggle is Real. So I want to recommend two books for you, okay? They are two very different books, but I think it applies. The first one is called When the Darkness Will Not Lift by a guy named John Piper. Piper is my guy. He is phenomenal. Amen. Yeah, he is phenomenal. He's just such a good teacher and preacher. This book is a shorter one. Shorter as in, like, less lengthy. Not showing any bias here, guys. I went to Georgia Southern, so get over it. But so it's a smaller book, and it's just about, it's exactly what it says. What happens when the darkness won't lift, when this won't go away? Where is God when this won't go away? And I think it will help provide maybe some scaffolding or some foundation for you in terms of what does the Bible say about these problems in our lives that won't leave us alone. Does that make sense? The second, so that's called When the Darkness Will Not Lift, okay? And the second one is called A Walk in the Woods by a guy named Bill Bryson. Bill Bryson is hilarious. Do you know Bill Bryson? Yeah, you did, Michaela. Phenomenal. What a coincidence. It's like you were meant to be here. So Bill Bryson is this guy who is hilarious. I don't even think he's a believer. And I'm recommending the book to you anyway. So here's what this is. When the Darkness Will Not Lift by John Piper. Bill Bryson is this out-of-shape guy who decides to find himself by, what does he decide to do, Michaela? He decides to hike the Appalachian Trail, which is not what someone out of shape trying to find themselves should do. And he brings his buddy, who's even more out of shape, with him. And, like, literally, they pack, like, Oreos and, like, all kinds of things like that. And they get about as far as you'd think. But along the way, like, it's just hilarious, and it actually is particularly endearing. It's just a good story. Bryson's got a great voice. He's a gifted writer. And the reason I recommend that to you is this, like, there are so many things that will happen to us, and, like, you're trying to stay on board theologically, you're trying to trust in God's sovereignty, you're trying to keep the cross in view, which is exactly what you should do. But the joke around here is sometimes you need to go to DQ and get a blizzard, right? And just, like, hang out in the parking lot for a little while with your friends. We want to be sure that we meet those needs too, right? When Jesus brings the little girl back to life, the first thing he says is get her something to eat. We have to meet these physical and spiritual needs. Does that make sense? One will suffer without the other. And I think When the Darkness Will Not Lift is a great book for one end. And Bill Bryson's book is a great time, just like you've had a long day. You want to kind of relax a little bit, and this book is a huge help. So does that make sense? So again, those are just two kind of big things that I think will help. But we're in a series called The Struggle is Real. So we're in Genesis chapter 39, okay, which is Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Let me ask a question. Let's do Mike, let's ask you, and then Sandra, you can help him out. What's wrong with this statement, okay? I'm not going to drill you on these. What's wrong with what I'm about to say? God cares about the big things in life. He doesn't care about the little things in life. What's wrong with that statement? There are a couple things, but what's wrong? Why do you think that's a wrong thing to say? God cares about the big things. He doesn't care about the little things, though. Well said. He does care about the little things. He does. Any thoughts, Sandra? Think about it like this. What are big events in life made up of, though? Hey, good job, Sandra. So the big things in life are made up of little things. Does that make sense? Saying that God cares about the big things in life but not the little things. Oh, by the way, we have Bibles and pens over here on this table if you need. So please don't feel weird about getting up and it's fine. It's okay. We've got those things for you. Saying that God cares about the big things in life but not the little things is like saying God only cares about books. He doesn't care about words. Kristen, what's wrong with what I just said? What's wrong with what I just said? He only cares about books. He doesn't care about words. What's wrong with that? Yes, books are made up of words, my theologian. So to care about one, to say that he doesn't care about one is to say that he doesn't care about the other thing. Does that make sense? So you've got to start to see in your own life, yes, God has an eternal plan for your life, an eternal destiny. But these big events in your life are made up of smaller things. Does that make sense? So the problem is, that means that your flat tire, your bombed math test, your great day at work, all these little things are part of God's big eternal plan. Of course, Jesus is invested in your eternal destiny, but he's not invested in the small things in your life. He is, though. Every class, every hangout time with friends, every time alone in your dorm, every day at work, Christ is intimately involved in these things because these little things are what make up your eternal destiny. These words are what make up the book of your life. Does that make sense? So if he's handwriting, it's at, you know, Psalm 139, in your book are written all the days of my life. It doesn't say all the years or the eternities. It says the days. If he's handwriting the days, he's handwriting the moments. Does that make sense? So don't think that God is not intimately involved with your flat tire or your time at the DMV. Does that make sense? He's there. He really, and when you see that, I'm not saying it's going to make that situation go away, but it changes how you look at that situation, and it really does help, okay? So, we're in Genesis 39. Anna, can you do me a solid and keep a finger in Psalm 105 as well? Thank you so much. So, we're in Genesis 39. We're going to go to Psalm 105 in a little bit. This is the story of Joseph. Joseph is the guy that you go to. Joseph is the story that you go to when things are going bad and you have no idea why. That's Joseph, okay? And I would love for us to do like a secret church thing and spend like a day and a half here and I just walk you through the whole thing, but we've only got about 20 to 30 minutes. So we're just going to hop through chapter 39 and some pieces of it, okay? So we're going to hop through it piece by piece, and then I'm going to come back around and explain what exactly does this have to do with the little things in your life. Does that make sense? All right, so in 39, we are going to ask people to read aloud. So put on your big boy pants and girl pants as well, okay? Not at the same time. We'll have to talk about some other things. So, all right, we're all on the same page here. Here we go. Some of you didn't. All right, here we go. And it may be on the board. Lauren, is up there? Okay, cool. It's up here too. So Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 through 2. Olivia, I'm going to call on you later because I know you got the KJV, but not yet. I'm going to let you get warmed up. All right, here we go. Let's do, Allie, you got it?
Yeah.
All right, can you read Genesis 39, 1 and 2 and kind of loud and proud because we got a little bit of an audience, okay?
When Joseph was taken to Egypt by the Ishmaelite,
good job. Good job. Thank you, Allie. That was really good. And you got through a tough one. That was with Ishmaelite. That was good. So Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers, actually. You think your family has problems, okay? First of all, for real, I tell this all the time. The only reason you think the Bible is boring is because you haven't read it, okay? This dude's brothers sold him into slavery, okay? Joseph is from Canaan. He's being sold into Egypt, where he's picked up by this guy. Now, somebody tell me, what was this guy's name? Say it like you mean it. Yeah, Potiphar. And okay, so let's do, Michaela, did you catch it? I think it's in two maybe. What is Potiphar? No, I'm sorry, it's in one. What is Potiphar's job? What is his title? Yeah, he's one of Pharaoh's officials. Does anyone else's version have a little more specific? Captain of the guard. He is Pharaoh's head of security, basically, okay? He is head of security for Pharaoh. This is a very important job. And he, of all people, is the one who buys Joseph on the slave trade, okay? So he buys Joseph as a servant, brings him in, and then verse 2, Allie, can you just read 2 again? It tells us something very important. So, the Lord is with Joseph. This is huge, and this is kind of the theme all throughout Joseph's story. He's in this terrible circumstance, right? Not that this is hitting home with any of you guys, right? He's in this rough circumstance, and the Lord is with him at the same time. Sometimes we isolate those two things, do we not? If I'm in this bad thing, where has God gone? Why is God not here? Dude was just sold as a slave, and it says the Lord was with him. You really don't think he's with you when rent doesn't come through? You really think he's not with you when you get injured, when you're playing a sport, or when, you see what I'm saying? Like, if he's with Joseph, the Bible just said, look at this, verse 1, sold as a slave. Verse 2, the Lord is with him. For real? Look at how those two things go together. One does not counterbalance or act out the other. All right, here we go. We got to keep going. Mike, you got it with me? Are you with me here? Can you do 3 through 5? 3 through 5. I know. I'm sorry. That's a third more than you get than Allie got. So. Can you also do 6 as well? I'm sorry, I know that was a, I know it shocked you there.
So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't worry about a thing except what kind of food to eat.
Excellent. What a dramatic note to end on right there. Okay, so the Lord is with, so Joseph sold as a slave, right? And then the theme is always what? The Lord is where? The Lord is what? He's with Joseph, right? So the Lord is with Joseph. Since the Lord is with Joseph, Ryan, how are Joseph's endeavors? How does his life go under Potiphar?
He's got everything he wants.
It's going very well, right? The Lord is rewarding Joseph. He's blessed. Blessing is a better word there. He's blessing Joseph. Joseph is very successful, right? Now, in the same thing, who notices this? Who notices how successful Joseph is? Yeah, I was about to say, he's the only other one we've mentioned. So yeah, other than God. So Potiphar notices how successful Joseph is, how adept Joseph is, how he's a quick learner, he's doing well. And again, this isn't, you know, crazy things, lightning coming out of his hands. Like, Joseph is just being blessed in the, now follow this, he's being blessed in the everyday. He's being blessed in the mundane, the ordinary things. We have to be careful. We have to look out for that too. We have to look for God's ordinary blessings when work goes fine. When the trip home, I mean, some of you guys drove to other states for the break. When that goes fine, we have to be sure if it's good enough for Genesis, then the Bible is really trying to tell us something. Don't just look for the miracle. Look for when God is intimately involved in your normal everyday affairs. Okay? Make sense? So follow this train of thought. Joseph is sold and picked up by Potiphar. The Lord is with Joseph. So Joseph is successful. So Potiphar gives Joseph basically a promotion and makes him head over the household, except for Zeb. What's the only thing that Potiphar now worries about? What he eats. Now, here's why this is being said. It basically means Potiphar, it's a phrase. Potiphar's only worried about what's directly in front of him now. Does that make sense? When you get your food, it's right in front of you, okay? Right? That's what's being said here. Joseph is in charge of so much of Potiphar's house that Potiphar doesn't even have to look up from anything else that he's doing. Potiphar only has to deal with his immediate personal stuff. Joseph is in control of everything else. Joseph is in charge of everything else. Let's see, Chancellor, if you're going to put somebody else in charge of everything else in your life, you have to really want that person. There's a real, yes, there's a huge trust factor here. Potiphar trusts Joseph with everything going on in his house and in the field, okay? And the Lord continues to bless. Let me stop here for just a minute. Anna, can you read Psalm 105? Can you read 16 and 17? So this is the psalm, this is way later, talking about what happened in Joseph's life, okay? So can you read 105, 16 and 17?
When he summoned a famine on the land and broke all supply of bread, he had sent a man ahead of them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave.
Okay, so he summons a famine. Olivia, who's the only person who can summon a famine? Well done. God, right? And it says, he sent someone ahead of them as a slave. And who's that talking about? Who was sent ahead as a slave? Sorry? Joseph. It doesn't say. Now, that's Psalm 105, 17. You may need to write that down. That does not say. So, let's do this. Emma, how did Joseph get into Egypt? He was what by who? All right. Psalm 105 doesn't say that. Did you catch that? Psalm 105, Corey, who sent Joseph? God, yeah, it's okay, it's an emotional thing. I'm just kidding, she's not getting emotional. I wouldn't blame you, like I get it. But look, it says, now follow this. Look at how this has happened. Look at God is sovereign in this. I'm going to explain in a minute. Genesis tells us clearly his brothers sold him as a slave into Egypt. Psalms, David, tells us God sent him. Look at how God is active and working through the lives of other people, even the people who want to do evil. Now, that doesn't mean that God approves of their evil, but he is at work in it. You follow that? And he blesses Joseph while... That was good, Anna. You can turn back. He blesses Joseph while Joseph's in captivity. We have to understand this. God is going to send you places as part of his eternal plan. God is going to keep you places, my people who want to get out and can't right now, right? As part of his eternal plan. God's going to send things into your life as part of his eternal plan. And when he pulls you into his eternal plan, we have to trust that he'll give us daily grace. You got eternal and you've got daily. When God pulls us into his eternal plan, he will give us daily grace during that eternal plan. Do you see that? That's going on in Joseph's life? Eternal plan. This is tough. He's been sold as a slave. Also, look at this. This is the slave trade. This is the dirtiest, most perverted thing that has ever happened, arguably, in the history of the world. And look at how God is at work in it. He's using the slave. Again, he's not approving of it. But even that evil cannot thwart his plan for good. Romans 8:37 says, we are more than conquerors. You've heard this verse. How can you be more than a conqueror? Because to conquer something is you beat up the enemy, you win, it's yours, you've conquered it. What's more than that? Lauren, do you want to take a swing? I'll help you. How can you be more than a conqueror? Take a shot. It's okay. No, that's good. And you're hitting around, and that's okay. Thoughts? Anyone else? How can we? And I'm gonna tell you, but how can we be more than a conqueror? How can you just to win the game is to win the game? How can you more than win the game? Okay, closer. You said use the game for good. Here's how this works. I played basketball in high school, and we were going this way, and the other team was going this way, but my friend Michael inbounded the ball right here and just didn't think and turned and put the ball in the other team's basket, right? So scored for the other team. This is what it means to be more than a conqueror. Conquerors defeat their enemies. If you're more than a conqueror, everything your enemy does in the long run just puts points in your basket. Does that make sense? That's how you're more than a conqueror. You don't have to defeat the enemy. The enemy is actually working for you in the long run. God's going to use Joseph being sold as a slave, spoiler alert, to rescue the entire known world from famine. And now, think about this. In Exodus, when Moses gets the Israelites out of slavery, help me out, what country are they enslaved in? Do you know how they got to Egypt? Joseph's family joins Joseph in Egypt when Joseph is in power. There they multiply. This is how the whole thing begins. God's the only one that gave Pharaoh power over Israel in the first place because he moves Joseph's family there. We have to begin to look at things like this. The Lord working with you, and I don't know that you can see it now. Maybe you can't, and that's okay. But what a difference it would make, seriously, what a difference it would make in your flat tire, in your bounced check, if you began to understand that ultimately, with the cross in view, the Lord is using this to put points in your basket, to work in your favor. I'm not promising, you know, health, wealth, prosperity gospel, but I'm saying the Lord is using that to work deeper in your life. One quick example, then we've got to move on. But, you know, there's this guy, he's a theologian, he gets cancer. And in the last year of his life, think about studying the Bible knowing that you're days away from seeing him, right? What a different Bible study. And this dude's a theologian, that's his job. And he says, I have learned more in this year of cancer with Jesus than I have learned in 30 plus years of studying theology. You see how that cancer actually put points in his basket? Does that make sense? This is what's happening here. And this is the way we have to see, not just the cancer, not just the divorce or the terrible family problems, though there's grace right in there, but the daily things too, the bad conversations with mom, the tough times with friends. You have to understand, look at it through that the Lord's putting points in your basket. All right, we got to keep going. So here we get into the new stuff. Let's do, Anna, would you mind reading again? Is that okay? Can you read Genesis 39? Give me 6 through 10. 6 through 10.
So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. But Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Okay, so Joseph is now head over Potiphar's household, and Joseph is noticed by this woman, right? Leslie, who is this woman? What's going on? Potiphar's wife notices Joseph. Now, this is huge, and we're going to get into this at the end when I pull it all back around. She notices Joseph, right? And Zeb, what does she want to do with Joseph? Tuck that shirt in, and you just tell me. Put it out there. We're in college. She wants to do what?
She wants to do that one.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yes. So she wants to have sex with Joseph, right? Again, the only reason you think the Bible's boring. Like the deacons over there are like, whoa, what? Someone just said sex in the student building. Like you're gonna hear like in like 10 minutes or there. Anyway, so here we go. Potiphar's wife wants to sleep with Joseph. And Joseph, and not a trick question, right? Not a trick question. Ryan, Joseph's response is what?
No.
Now, here's why this is important. And now we're going to get theological for just a second, and then we're going to bring it back. Not a trick question, okay? Not a trick question. Kristen, what book of the Bible is this in? Well done. This is in Genesis. Now, this is before the time of Moses and the Ten Commandments, one of which is do not commit adultery. That's the Ten Commandments. That comes later, okay? Yet in Genesis, before the Ten Commandments, Joseph, who is a follower of God, already knows this is wrong. I know, and some of you may think this, and that's okay, that's why you're here. But I think sometimes we think that the reason we pull some of God's law is from the Ten Commandments. This is before the Ten Commandments, and already there is sexual morality, there is sexual rules, there is respect for the covenant of marriage and sex within that bound. You see how Joseph sees that? Joseph doesn't know who Moses is. And already Joseph is pulling from this ethic. Think about why would Cain be punished for the murder of Abel if the Ten Commandments of do not murder haven't been released yet? Because the Ten Commandments aren't independent of themselves. The Ten Commandments come from who? Yes, I was wondering if it was going to be Moses. The Ten Commandments come from God. God himself is the law. God himself, and not just the law, but God himself is where we get these standards. The law is the heart of God. The law is the image of God. So when we break these laws, it's not that you're breaking the law, breaking the rule. It's an assault on God. Does that make sense? And we know it, not because, and again, I didn't get this from whatever, oldwhitechristians.com, right? I got this from here, right? I did. I got this from the Bible. This is one of the texts you can go to. Listen, because I know some of you are on the fence about some of this, right? I'm not naive. Begin to wrestle with some of these texts and see, why does Joseph think this is wrong if he hasn't been explicitly told this yet? You see that? All right. So he says no. She continues to chase after him, and he continually says no. Now, help me out. What was the theme? Remember, I said there was kind of a theme, this reoccurring theme in Genesis about what's going on with Joseph and where the Lord is? Well done, Anna. The Lord was with Joseph. Now, this is so important. It's easy for me to sit here and say, don't worry about what's going on in your life. The Lord is with you. Now get out of here and go be awesome. But here's the problem with that. Yes, the Lord is with you. But a real evidence that the Lord is with you is that in trial, we act in a way that's faithful to him. The Lord being with you does not mean just he's going to put all the points in your basket, he's going to work everything out for good. If every time you get stressed, you turn to pornography, and then the stress, the thing that's stressing you fades and it works out well, I would be very hesitant to say that the Lord is with you. I will say that mercifully, he helped you get out of that. And I'm not going to say that if you turn to pornography, he's going to punish you through that. You can't look at it that way. The cross changes a lot of this. But one of the ways, how can I know that the Lord is with me in my trials, Ryan? How can I know? One of the ways, and you're not going to get this right every time, one of the ways you can know that the Lord is with you is in that time of trial, are you acting faithfully to him in it? Does that make sense? Joseph is in this time of trial, and the Lord is with him, and look at how he acts, faithful to him. You could take out all the good that's come. You remember he's prosperous under Potiphar. He's prosperous in the jail. He's prosperous under Pharaoh. Obviously, the Lord was with him. Yeah, but what happens when you're not prosperous? How do you know the Lord's really with you? This is the verse that you have to go to. Are you acting faithfully in these times of stress? That's how we know the Lord is with. And listen, you're going to mess that up. That doesn't mean he's going to abandon you. The Lord is doing a lot of... Joseph is not a great guy before he gets put into slavery. The Lord has worked. Neither was Esther. Neither was Abraham. The Lord uses these things to work in our lives. All right, now, here's how I bring this all back. This is great, whatever, I learned some stuff. What does this have to do with the Lord being at work daily? Okay, look at these verses here. Look at verse 2, and I'm going to read it. I'm going to show you. Follow this chain of events. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. So the Lord is with Joseph. That's what starts this train, verse 3. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord caused all he did to succeed. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him and made him overseer of all that he had. And Potiphar put him in charge of his entire house. So the Lord is with Joseph. And so Joseph is successful. Potiphar notices Joseph's success. You see this train? Potiphar advances Joseph in his house and gives him a promotion. Now, Potiphar's wife. Potiphar, now, Chancellor, do you remember, what is Potiphar's job? What's his title?
He's the guard.
He's the what? He is the head of security for Pharaoh, arguably the most important job in Egypt. Potiphar's wife is very well off. There is no way Potiphar's wife, no matter how handsome this guy is, there is no way Potiphar's wife is going to notice a common foreign slave. Unless something happens to Joseph that gets him moved out into the front. Unless somehow Joseph is being blessed by something that allows him to be successful, that allows Potiphar to notice, that allows Potiphar to come home every night to eat with his wife, to talk about what a great job Joseph did, to talk about how now Joseph is going to be the one that walks around the house all the time. The women didn't work back then, right? So Joseph is noticed all the time now by Potiphar's wife. And the whole thing that started this chain was God being with Joseph. If God doesn't bless Joseph, Joseph is not successful. He remains a foreign slave, just another person in Potiphar's house that never gets mentioned, never gets brought to the front, and Potiphar's wife will never see him. The whole reason Joseph gets put into this mess is because God blessed him. Do you see that? This is what led to Joseph being noticed by Potiphar's wife in the first place. We have to understand that God is at the root of every single thing that goes wrong in your life. He is at the root of every single negative thing that happens to you. God is the one who moves this out into the front. God is the one who brings whatever, who brings the student to the Bible study who's a little bit contentious, or the one who brings the person into your dorm room who you don't get along with, or the one who brings this thought into your mom's head that makes you have that conversation you don't want to have. God is the one who brings all these things into focus. And when we see that none of these things would be allowed into your life if God didn't get to interview them first, it changes how we look at these things in our lives. Does that make sense? All the negative things in Joseph's life, God was the one who started this. God blessing Joseph. Let me follow the train one more time. God blesses Joseph, which makes him successful, which gets Potiphar's attention, which makes Potiphar give Joseph a better role, which then gets him noticed. Look at, it says in verse 7, and after these things, after this time, after what? After Joseph is made successful by God, after Joseph is promoted, then Potiphar's wife notices him. You see how God is at the bare bottom of all of this? Beginning all of these things? And again, that's not going to, see, now you feel better. That's not how this is supposed to work. But part of the key to suffering is continually, you got to keep coming back to this. Changing your perspective on suffering. Changing how we see. Remember, you are being guarded by God Almighty. Christ is standing in front of you with holes in his hands to keep back these things. And the only way these things can get to you is if God sees them, he puts markers on them. You will not do this, you will not do this, you will not do this. Now you can go. Now the flat tire can happen. Now the disease can come. Now the breakup can get here. Now you and mom get to talk about this. Only after God has seen the trial first. Do you see that? Does that make sense? We're done. The band's going to come back up. I'm going to be here after for you guys just to talk if you need to, or just to ask more questions. One of the things that I do want to do this semester is open up time for like some Q&A a little bit, if that makes sense, if we have some time. And we'll see how that goes. We'll see if I put my head in the lion's mouth. But this is kind of what we're doing for the next couple weeks, is just studying where is God in the small things in our lives. Where is God in the little things? And I know I didn't address, the little, but look at how God is walking with Joseph every step. That's what's happening here. And that's what's happening in your life. God is with you every step. Let me pray, and then we'll stand and sing for a little bit.